නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස So as you all can remember, we were discussing one interesting sutta which is called Dvaitanupassana Sutta, available in the Sutta Nipata, and it is dealing with some interesting details, certain contemplations which we can summarize as we are continuing with our practice. So we can't say that these are very early beginnings of the practice, but rather we can say this is how we may be ultimately conclude, okay, this is now what I need to do, this is what I have to do now. It's a kind of summarization of our practice, kind of coming to a certain milestone of our practice. Now, Buddha, while he was in the Savatthi, in Migaramatu Pasada, the monks were practicing really diligently. After seeing that, Buddha has delivered this sutta. And the question Buddha himself asked, what is your aim in listening to those teachings that are wholesome, noble, emancipating, leading to enlightenment? So in a way we can simply say that the goal is simply to attain Nibbana, to attain enlightenment. So anyway, Buddha's answer here is very much like practice oriented. It is not talking about the ultimate goal, but in order to reach ultimate goal, what is the kind of direct path, what is the summarized conclusion that ultimately we need to continue. We may have various methods available, we are trying this and that, and ultimately where we are going to merge into. So such kind of conclusions, that such kind of aims are described in this sutta. So that's why we can say this is not the beginner stuff. We can say this for a person who has already gained some understanding about Vipassana, some understanding about the teachings, and then for him this would be a much better conclusion. The first contemplation is based on the Four Noble Truths, and we already discussed that. The second one is based on the acquisitions, those are the upadis. Whatever suffering arises, that happens because of the acquisitions of the upadis, or because of these acquisitions. And then if we are able to abandon all those acquisitions, then there won't be any suffering. So that is the contemplation. And then the third solution, or the third aim, third concluding aim, is with respect to ignorance. Whatever suffering arises, it happens because of ignorance, avidya. And if there is no any ignorance, so that is the supramundane attainment of Nibbana. So that is the second contemplation. So each and every solution summarized in this sutta are duets. So that's why it is called Dvaitanupassana. So we have to contemplate based on two sides. We can say the first side is very much a mundane side, and the other side is the result, that is the supramundane side. Now, fourth contemplation is based on the volitional activities or sankharas. So whatever suffering arises, that happens because of sankhara. And if there is no volitional formations, then there is no suffering. The fifth contemplation is, or fifth solution is based on consciousness. The first contemplation says whatever the suffering happens, that happens because of consciousness, vijnana. So that is the abhisankata vijnana, that constructed consciousness. On the other hand, if there is no suffering, so that means if there is no consciousness, if the abhisankata vijnana, the constructed consciousness, is completely ceased, then there is no suffering. And then last time we discussed on the contact. So that was the sixth contemplation. That is the sixth solution, sixth aim. So whatever suffering arises, that happens because of contact. And if there is no contact, or we can simply say with the cessation of the contact, there is no arising of suffering. So this is the sixth solution, sixth aim, sixth milestone of our practice that Buddha summarized in this sutta. Now we can get into the next one. So the next solution. So if someone is asking, is there any other aim of this practice? Could there be a correct contemplation of dyads in some other way? If someone is asking, Buddha says, yes, you can give another answer. So that is actually based on the feelings. Yankinchi dukkhaṁ sambhoti sabbhaṁ vedanā pachyāti ayaṁ ekānu pasana. So whatever suffering arises, it arises because of feelings. Vedanānān tveva asesa virāga nirodha natti dukkhasa sambhavoti ayaṁ dutiyānu pasana. If we are able to abandon all the feelings, if we are able to allow all the feelings to fade away, then there is no suffering. So that is the second contemplation. Now, this solution, this summarization of our practice, coming down to the feelings, happens even today's meditative world. There are methods like Goenka method. They are fairly concentrating their practice on the feelings. And again trying to recognize feelings. And basically their practice is fairly focused, fairly summarized based on the feelings. Now, if we get some idea about feelings, so what are the feelings? So there are informations available about feelings in various other suttas. So I am taking another sutta called Chula Vedalla Sutta in order to get some information. And there's an interesting discussion happened between Visakha and Bhikkhuni, Arahant Bhikkhuni Dhammadinna. Probably you have heard about this story. Dhammadinna was the previous wife of Visakha, and Visakha actually first attained to the non-returner level, Anagami level, and after realizing that change, Dhammadinna decided to become a nun, and she became a nun, and quickly she attained Arahanthood. Now Visakha wants to verify why Dhammadinna returns to the same city fairly quickly without staying longer in the forest, without staying longer in practice. So now Visakha is asking various questions from Dhammadinna. So that is the theme of this sutta. So various questions asked by Visakha. So that is the theme of this whole Vedalla Sutta, Mahavedalla Sutta. Chula Vedalla Sutta. And Kati Pana Ayye Vedanati. Now he directly asks, what are the types of feelings available? And then Venerable Dhammadinna is answering, there are Sukha Vedana, there are Dukha Vedana, Dukkama Sukha Vedana. There are pleasurable feelings or pleasant feelings, there are unpleasant, painful feelings, and there are neither painful nor pleasant feelings. And then he's asking further questions. What is the Sukha Vedana's real pleasantness? So we can say we have now said about the pleasant feelings, how it becomes pleasant and how can it become unpleasant. And similarly, what is the suffering of the Dukkha Vedana, and what is the happiness of the Dukkha Vedana? So these questions are asked. So when, say for example, when he asks about the Sukha Vedana, the pleasant feelings, so basically Venerable Dhammadinna is answering, when pleasant feelings are available, when they persist, so then actually it is a pleasant feeling. So we feel pleasant, we feel happy about it. But on the other hand, when it changes, so we feel unhappy, so that is the suffering of the pleasant feeling. So we want to have pleasant feelings as long as possible, but unfortunately they won't remain for a long time. They simply fade away. So that is the suffering part of the pleasant feelings. On the other hand, when painful feelings persist, when they are available, we feel painful, we feel unpleasant. But when they change, we feel a little bit relaxed, a little bit released. And once it is passing away, we feel somewhat satisfied. So that is the happy side of the painful feelings. When he asked about the pleasantness and the unpleasantness of the neither painful nor pleasant feelings, adukkama sukha vedana. So basically, Venerable Dhammadina answers, when you have a knowledge about adukkama sukha vedana, when you have knowledge about neither pleasant nor painful feelings, then it is pleasant. But on the other hand, if you don't have any idea about those equanimous feelings, then it appears like unpleasant. So that's a very interesting statement. So that means if we are able to know, if we are able to recognize equanimous feelings, so that gives us a pleasant abiding. What is available is a kind of neither painful nor pleasant feeling. But typically what happens is we are ignorant about it. We don't know about it. We feel bored about it and we don't want to pay attention to it. But according to Venerable Dhammadina, according to the Dhamma, basically if we are able to pay attention, if we are able to recognize, understand the availability of these equanimous feelings, so that is a pleasant abiding. So that's a very interesting phenomena. Then Venerable Dhammadina is questioned by Visakha about the anusaya, about the latent tendency related to these three types of feelings. Sukhaya panaye vedanaya king anusayo anuseti. Dukkhaya vedanaya king anusayo anuseti. Adukkama sukhaya vedanaya king anusayo anuseti. So then Venerable Dhammadina answers, sukhaya vedanaya raga anusayo anuseti. So raga anusaya is there, a tendency to lust or underlies lust is there for the pleasant feelings. On the other hand, the underlying tendency to aversion is there for the painful feelings. And underlying tendency to ignorance is there for the neither pleasant nor painful feelings. Now this is also a very interesting and important fact. So what happens is whenever we go through some pleasant feeling, we want to involve with it, we want to attach to it, we indulge with it, and we say it is my pleasant feeling, I want it. So that means the indulgence, that means the attachments, the attraction, grasping happens immediately or usually habitually to these pleasurable feelings, pleasant feelings. So what the result is that the underlying tendency to lust, raga anusaya, is growing. On the other hand, if something painful happens, then we start crying, lamenting, going through some despair, and such kind of a suffering is there. So that suffering ultimately causes to refuse what is going on, and we are in a way kind of hating, rejecting our experience. So that causes patika anusaya, underlying tendency to aversion is there with respect to painful feelings. On the other hand, when we don't know about the availability of equanimous feelings, so that means we are ignorant about it, so the underlying tendency to ignorance, so the avijja anusaya, is therefore neither pleasant nor painful feelings. Now this is also a very interesting and important fact. So it doesn't mean that we always want to act in order to accumulate some wholesome or unwholesome tendencies. Even if we simply grasp and simply claim or identify with certain pleasant feeling, pleasurable feeling, that would be enough for latent tendencies to grow. Similarly, if we are starting crying and lamenting and all such for painful feelings, that would be enough for the tendency of aversion, the patika anusaya, to grow. So the unmindful living basically causes these unwholesome roots to grow, these unwholesome tendencies to grow. So this is something that we need to remember. So the moment that we are unmindful, the moment that we can't recognize what's really going on, we are not aware of the type of feelings that is going on, unfortunately we are adding to the latent tendencies. And then another interesting question is asked later about this anusaya. So the practice is to abandon this anusaya. Sukhaya panaye vedanaya king pahatambang. Dukkhaya vedanaya king pahatambang. Adukkama sukhaya vedanaya king pahatambang. So the next question is related to what should be abandoned with respect to pleasant feelings, what should be abandoned with respect to painful feelings, what should be abandoned with respect to equanimous feelings. And then Venerable Dhammadinna is answering, so those anusayas are to be abandoned. So sukhayako avaso visaka vedanaya raga anusayo pahatambu. So this raga anusaya, the tendency to lust accompanied in the pleasant or pleasurable feelings, have to be abandoned. On the other hand, the tendency to aversion accompanied with the painful feelings, so that has to be abandoned. Ignorance, which is available sometimes when we are going through the equanimous feelings, so that ignorance have to be abandoned. That means we have to be mindful. We have to be mindful of the type of feelings available right now. If we are able to be mindful, then we can avoid grasping to the pleasurable feelings. If we are able to be mindful, we can avoid some kind of aversion, rejection, negation to these painful feelings. And if we are mindful, we will be able to recognize the equanimous feelings without being ignorant. So that is very important. And then very interesting question is asked by Visakha. He is asking, are all the pleasurable feelings, are all the pleasant feelings are accompanied with raga anusaya? Are all the pleasurable feelings accompanied with raga anusaya? Do we have to work on all the pleasurable feelings? Because they accompany raga anusaya, so we need to abandon that. And then Venerable Dhammadinna says no. So there are certain pleasant, pleasurable feelings that don't accompany anusayas, that don't accompany latent tendencies to lust. So that then we don't need to worry about such kind of pleasant feelings. One example she mentioned is that viviccheva kamehi viviccha kusalehi dammehi savitattvam savicharam vivekajam pidusukam padaman jhanam upasampanja viherati ragantena pajahati. So if one has attained jhana, so that is a very pleasant abiding. One may go through a very pleasant, blissful experience, but the interesting thing is, in order to attain that, one may have to abandon the lustful nature to various other five sensual chords. In order to attain a jhana, you have to abandon the desire towards the sights, the desire towards the sounds, desire towards smells, taste, tangibles. So that is the gross desire, sensual desire we have for these five sensual chords. So that have to be abandoned in order to attain the jhana. So that means jhana does not happen until we have lust. So lust have to be temporarily subsided in order to attain jhana. So while being in jhana, you may experience a blissful, pleasant experience which is devoid of lust. So as a result of that, Venerable Dhammadinna answers, so that it is not being influenced by lust. So you don't need to worry about abandoning latent tendency to lust while you are in the jhana. So that is an exceptional case where you are going through certain amount of meditative practice which can bring you a lot of happiness, pleasantness, but we don't need to worry about thinking whether it would provide any kind of lustful tendency into the mind. It doesn't. And not only with the samatha practice, even with vipassana practice, one may go through such kind of a very pleasant abiding, and that also should be able to attain only when sensual desires are abandoned. So here actually we are talking about all the niramisa piti. So that is unworldly kind of happiness. So whenever we are going through unworldly kind of happiness, niramisa piti, it doesn't entertain any kind of lust. We can't promote any sensual desire there. So as a result of that, the lust is basically abandoned, temporarily abandoned. So therefore, latent tendency to lust is not there. On the other hand, Visakha is asking, are all the unpleasant feelings or painful feelings accompany the aversion, the tendency to aversion? Do we need to work on that? All the painful feelings. And then Venerable Dhammadina says, no, there are situations that where one may go through certain kind of desire or kind of unpleasant situation with respect to spiritual life. Now there are situations that we are meditating but still we can't attain maybe the desired situations, desired expectations. Say you want to become a sotapanna, but still you are not. One needs to become an arahant or anagami, non-returner, but still you are not. So you may have a kind of a yearning in your mind. So when am I going to have that? When am I going to experience that? When can I live in such a kind of uplifted or sublime state? So that desire, that expectation also gives or generates certain amount of unhappiness, certain amount of restlessness or little unrest in the mind, but which is actually based on some spiritual attainment, which is not actually hating something unpleasant. Now typically when we go through some kind of a worry, some kind of a painful feeling, so that could be mostly because of some kind of mundane, unpleasant, painful experience. And while we are experiencing that, unfortunately what we are expecting is actually something desirable. Say for example, you are in a situation where currently you are going through some rain and it disturbs. And that is also a mundane activity, and it disturbs and you might get wet, and it disturbs and you are in a somewhat uncomfortable situation. And it may be even very cold. Now what you are expecting is the opposite. So you want to be at a very pleasant abiding, you want to be at a luxurious bed, you want to be at a fairly good house which is completely free from all the getting wet, and it is very protected. So what we are expecting right now is something again with respect to the senses. So that is what actually we are expecting, that is basically related to five sensual cords. So the alternative solution we know is only about the sensual pleasures with respect to five senses. Apart from that, there is no another alternative solution. Typically one may encounter, one may think, when they are going through some painful feelings. While they are going through painful feeling, what they want is a pleasant feeling. But when we consider the spiritual attainment, spiritual kind of unrest, so you are expecting to become a sotapanna, for example, that is not something that we can say you can gain through a sensual desire. So basically it is also further related to renunciation, further related to abandoning of the defilements. So expectation is completely a kind of a different type of expectation. It doesn't involve any sort of tendency to aversion as a result of that. So Venerable Dhammadinna therefore mentioned, if such kind of unfulfilled spiritual desires cause any sort of unrest, it does not get involved with latent tendency to aversion. And then further, the question, are all the equanimous feelings accompany ignorance? And then Venerable Dhammadinna says, no, there are situations that you may go through certain meditative experiences which are basically equipped with pure mindfulness, and it is equanimous, and which also does not involve any kind of ignorance, because you are well aware of it, you have mindfully attained it, but you feel equanimous, you feel very good equanimity, but you are very aware of it. As a result of that, there is no latent tendency to ignorance. Similarly, suppose you are in emptiness, you are in some sort of a vipassana related experience, which are mostly equanimous, but you are knowingly staying there. You have very good mindfulness while you are dwelling in such kind of a vipassana experience. So we can conclude those also does not impact any sort of ignorance. Instead, ignorance will be abandoned. You are knowingly staying there. So those kind of very subtle differences are there when we consider these three types of feelings, that is pleasant feelings, painful feelings and equanimous feelings. And how we are going to know all this? So that is through vipassana, that is through vedananupassana, we can say. So that's why in Satipatthana there is a separate section, what we call vedananupassana, where one needs to be fully aware of different kinds of feelings. Katanchapana bhikkhave bhikkhu vedanasu vedananupassi viharati. So how are you going to practice contemplation of feelings? Ida bhikkhave bhikkhu sukhangva vedanang vediyamanu sukhang vedanang vediyamiti pajanati. So when one goes through a pleasant feeling, so he understands, that person understands, I feel a pleasant feeling. So simple as that. So that means full awareness is there. So it may start with bodily feelings, but it is not limited to bodily feelings. It has to be expanded towards the mental pleasantness as well. Immediately, sometimes you might not be able to step back and look it. But as we gather the experience, so whenever pleasant feeling is there in the body, kind of a pleasurable feeling is there in the body, one can step back and watch it, start observing it, recognizing it as a pleasant feeling, pleasurable feeling, rather than identifying with it. So this proper perspective is very important. So there is a feeling, so you are recognizing it. So that objective looking, the way of looking at the feelings. And when certain mental pleasantness or mental kind of relaxation or very pleasant abiding happens, that or kind of rapture is happening, so one should be able to recognize that as well, because one is able to recognize bodily pleasurable feelings, pleasant feelings. The same approach can be used to the mind. So the mind is now going through certain pleasant experience, you are able to recognize that as well. So likewise, the vipassana practice with respect to the feelings, the Satipatthana practice with respect to the feelings, help us to avoid identification, avoid grasping to the pleasant feelings. The typical tendency in the mind is to grasp, but now that grasping tendency is abandoned because you are able to step back and watch it objectively. Similarly, there may be painful feelings without hating them, without being impatient about them. So one is now developing a certain skill to look at them, to investigate them. So that is the beauty of the Vedanupassana, where you are able to step back and watch even the painful feelings. And as a result of that, you are not identifying them, you are not hating them, you are not rejecting them. You simply acknowledge them and looking at them objectively. They are not my painful feelings. It is not that I am suffering. Rather, it is a mere painful feeling. So this perspective is extremely important. So there is a painful feeling. There is a pleasant feeling. So similarly, there is a equanimous feeling. So rather than being ignorant about the equanimous feelings when they are available, so we have to be aware of that. We have to be aware of the availability of equanimous feelings. So one is always in the present moment, not in the past, not in the future, daydreaming or fantasizing in a completely different mental world. Rather, you are in this present moment, fully aware what is really going on. So that's why sometimes it is Buddha has praised whatever the feelings going through, that person should be able to recognize, and those feelings cannot go through without his knowledge, without his awareness. So if we completely shifted our attention to something else, completely distracted, during that time there may be various feelings occur, but we are not aware of that because our mind is completely distracted. But on the other hand, if we are able to establish mindfulness, we are maintaining mindfulness, that means we are very aware of the present experience. The experience is completely known to us. We are fully aware of what is really going on. So as a result of that, if there is a pleasurable feeling, we are fully aware of it. If there is a painful feeling, we are fully aware of it. And if there is an equanimous feelings, again we are fully aware of it. So under our supervision, the feelings are arising and passing away. So the second part of this Satipatthana practice is to recognize their true nature. So at the beginning, when we are trying to observe different feelings, sometimes we need certain amount of practice because we need certain amount of concentration to properly observe them. And we certainly need mindfulness to observe them because they are happening right now. We are not talking about the past experiences, past painful feelings, rather the feelings happening right now in the present moment. So our attention has to be fully landed upon them, and therefore that means our mind has to be fully available in the present moment. So the mindfulness has to be very well established. So the sati has to be fully available, mindfulness has to be fairly developed, and on the other hand attention also has to be there, and concentration also has to be there. Mind has to be well concentrated. Now that's why sometimes we first start developing Kayanupassana instead of developing Vedananupassana. Say you are observing rising and falling of the abdomen, you are observing mindfulness on breathing. So that all helps us to develop these necessary skills, and mindfulness is now maybe available. Concentration is also now available, and you are able to look at them properly. The clear comprehension is also available. Now you can try Vedanupassana. Rather than immediately jump into Vedanupassana, it is a very good approach, a proper approach to develop all necessary skills through Kayanupassana. Then sometimes naturally mind selects feelings. So that's a kind of a natural tendency available in the mind. So as we practice, probably rather than recognizing elements characteristics, probably it may select the feelings tone, because it's a more simplified version. If we are experiencing elements, so it may be different, many types of element characteristics are there, But you can simply simplify your practice by recognizing feelings, because there are only three types of feelings: pleasant, unpleasant, and equanimous. Only those three you need to know. And in a way, we are aiming towards simplifying the practice, abandoning certain complexities, rather simplifying the practice. But it doesn't mean we are not being able to understand the profound experiences. Rather, the simplified mind is capable of going deeper down, approaching or realizing deeper truths, profound truths. It is not that when the mind is crowded and kind of complicated, congested, we are able to understand deeper truths. The opposite is the correct thing. When mind is relaxed, when mind is calm, when mind is fairly simplified, when unnecessary congestions or corruptions available in the mind are abandoned, all the signs, unnecessary conventional stuff are abandoned, then mind become more and more simplified. And on the other hand, it has to remain in the present moment, well concentrated. Then we can recognize what is really going on. The true nature of phenomena should be available to us, because our mind is well focused, paying proper attention, and fully aware in the present moment. Now, as we continue that kind of a practice, now feelings available are slowly known to us. When pleasant feeling is there, we can pay attention to that. We keep our focused attention there and we can observe it. When unpleasant feeling is there, we can simply pay attention to that. We can observe it. When equanimous feeling is there, we can pay attention to that. We can observe it. So likewise, as we continue, slowly, slowly, these feelings become apparent to us. So they are nature, they are arising and passing away nature, they are fragile nature, they are inconstant nature. So all that going to be very much like known to us. Previously we only heard about them, but now we are directly experiencing them. So at the beginning we may not be able to understand all the different facets of the feelings, but slowly, slowly, as we start experimenting them, investigating them, so they are nature, they are behavior, they are subtle characteristics, and they are dependent nature, how the different types of contact is conditioning the results of the feelings or the tone of the feelings is known to us. Because as you know, the cause of the feelings is the contact, passapaccaya vedana. And that could be known to the yogi. So as he is paying very close attention, trying to recognize the cause of the feelings. And on the other hand, when one may be shifting towards the cittanupassana, one can even recognize how pleasant feelings cause desires, how pleasurable feelings causes desires. On the other hand, how vedana paccaya tanha starts working. So when one is going through very pleasant, pleasurable experience, so what is the tendency available in the mind? You want it more, I want it, I want to have it, I want to possess it, I want to own it, I want to prolong it. So this is a kind of a desire typically arise in the mind. So that can be checked, that can be recognized, and that actually involves a certain amount of cittanupassana as well, more than the vedanupassana. So likewise, the feelings help us to understand all our bodily characteristics and the mind domains. And as we are continuing this practice, one may understand, okay, these feelings are completely impermanent. They don't last for a long time. They are constantly arising and passing away. Previously, I had an experience of experiencing certain amount of pleasantness, pleasurable feelings. But now it is very much fragile. When I don't have much clear comprehension, I can't experience it its proper nature. But when clear comprehension is available, the subtle characteristics of feelings are going to be evident. So how quickly they arise and pass away. It is not a single pleasant feeling, it may be a bunch of pleasant feelings. It may be a bunch of or group of painful feelings. It may be a group of equanimous feelings. So likewise, some subtle characteristics of feelings going to be known to the yogi. So that's why in the Satipatthana Sutta, Buddha mentioned that one may be able to understand the arising and passing away nature of various feelings. And in Satipatthana Sutta, there's another side also discussed, that is the Samisa Vedana and Niramisa Vedana. We already touched that in the Anusaya part, and there may be Samisa Vedana and there may be Niramisa Vedana. So that means there are pleasurable feelings which are due to some kind of sense impact. Say you are watching a movie and it generates certain amount of happiness. So this happiness is Samisa Vedana. This is a worldly kind of happiness. On the other hand, assume that you are going to some sort of meditative practice and your mind become very pleasant, certain amount of rapture is available. Now you are going through a blissful, pleasant feeling, but this is a unworldly kind of pleasant feeling. This is a Niramisa Vedana. So one would be able to recognize both these type of feelings. And more one may go through them, one may understand how quickly they arise and pass away, how impermanent they are. And it is common to all the pleasant feelings, it is common to all painful feelings and equanimous feelings. So all the feelings are subjected to this kind of change, this kind of arising and passing away. So as we continue that, the result is that these feelings start fading away. They very much like now appear kind of mixed. Previously actually they appear distinct. We are able to distinctly recognize painful feelings, pleasant feelings, equanimous feelings. But now you might not be able to even distinctly recognize them. Everything appear like a flux. Everything appear like coming and going. And since they are very quickly passing away, you might not be able to recognize whether it is a painful feeling, whether it is a pleasant feeling, or whether it is an equanimous feeling. So you might simply say it's a mere feeling. So that information, that demarcations are now slowly fading away. So likewise, one may start developing certain amount of dispassion towards them, towards the feelings, and ultimately the mind may completely detach from them. So through Vedananupassana, one may experience complete detachment to feelings, and as a result of that, mind can get released. So one may see feelings as mere feelings, so that understanding may develop. On the other hand, one understand now mind is not associating feelings. Feelings are there, but mind remains unattached to feelings. So through Vedananupassana also, one would be able to develop that anisita state, unattached, unassociated state. Feelings are there, but now mind is not grasping them. Maybe certain very beautiful sight is there. It may generate certain amount of happiness, but mind is not grasped. There may be a certain painful feeling going on. You may be known to that, but mind is not worried about it. Mind is not disturbed by that. Likewise, the feelings are now slowly detached. So this is actually well explained in the Dvaitanupassana Sutta. So fair amount of summary is there in the Dvaitanupassana Sutta. So in Dvaitanupassana Sutta, Buddha, after saying the nature of these feelings, that feelings are the cause of suffering, if you are able to abandon feelings, so if you are able to abandon the grasping of to the feelings, then there is no suffering. So after mentioning that, Buddha actually gave two verses here. Sukham va yadi va dukkham adukkama sukham saha ajjattancha bahiddacha yankinche attiveditam. So basically the vipassana practice is summarized here. So there are pleasant feelings, there are painful feelings, there are equanimous feelings. Whatever that is felt internally and externally. Etan dukkhanti yatvana. Now you know them as kind of a suffering. You know that they have the quality of suffering. They are constantly subjected to arising and passing away. So they are torturing by this universal truth. Completely oppressed by this arising and passing away. So they are suffering. Even the present feeling subjected to arising and passing away. So it is also therefore we can't say it is kind of a happiness because it's quickly arise and pass away. It changed to something else. Etan dukkhanti nyatvana. So the yogi may now see them as some sort of a suffering. Mosa dhammam palokitam. And that causes, by the way, if we have ignorance, if we don't know much about it, so there is a kind of a deceiving nature is there. When there are the pleasant feelings are there, if we don't know their true nature, we easily get attracted to them. We easily start grabbing them, easily get identifying with them, grasping them. So that is their deceiving nature, illusory nature. So therefore, here Buddha mentioned, interestingly, they are mosa dhamma. So they are actually having some sort of a falsified nature. And palokina, and they constantly disintegrate, constantly quickly pass away, disintegrate. Pussa pussa vayam passam evan tatta virajyati. So you are looking at them for each and every contact, how feelings are arising. Different feelings are arising per each contact. And because you know that contact is the main cause for feelings. And as you see this whole thing, you start feeling dispassion. Evan tatta virajyati. So kind of detachment going to happen, disenchantment going to happen, seeing they are vanishing. And vedanānaṁ khayā bhikkhu nicchāto parinibbutoti. So Buddha mentioned, so as these feelings are fading away, as they are going through certain amount of destruction, so he see them, and so his attachment towards them, his passion towards them, his craving towards them slowly abandon. And ultimately the craving is quenched. Craving is abandoned. Craving is faded away. Nichato parinibbuto. So the all desires are now slowly abandoned. As a result of that, now no more desires, no more pain, no more requests, no more demands in the mind. Thirst is quenched. So basically, Vedananupasana is therefore sometimes mentioned as a very good but bit difficult type of practice because you may have to have fair amount of forbearance, fair amount of patience in order to go through it, because you may be able to bear a certain amount of painful feelings as well. But there are certain yogis actually who have this caliber. So they can maintain their posture, they can maintain fair amount of patience, even they are going through very extreme kind of pains. But it doesn't mean that it is a must. It doesn't mean that we all have to go through these painful feelings in order to understand these painful feelings. You are free to change the posture. But if you have a certain amount of patience, so that would be a helps to accelerate your results. And so in this section, in this Dvaitanupassana Sutta, so basically Buddha summarized, if one is able to practice Vedananupassana like this, if one understands that whatever suffering arises, that happens because of feelings, and if we are able to abandon them, if all these feelings are faded away, then there is no suffering. So that's an interesting question sometimes asked by certain monks even. one monk actually asked from Venerable Sariputta. So if there is no feelings, what's the point in Nibbana? So that the Venerable Sariputta answers, so the absence of those conditioned feelings itself is the happiness available in the Nibbana. Because these kind of feelings are completely dependent, and they constantly depend on various, say, causes, and therefore, if one is attached to such kind of feelings, depending on them, then one may go to suffer. Knowing their impermanent nature, if one is able to abandon them, not attached to the conditioned feelings, one may find a pleasant abiding in unattached state. Mind does not want to attach to feelings. It may be simply kind of desireless, rather than trying to fulfill desires. So it becomes desireless, free from raga, free from patiga, free from any kind of lust, free from greed. So free from all kind of desires, cravings. So that is something like fulfilling all the feelings. So fulfilling all the kind of cravings, fulfilling all the kind of desires, because you have no desires. Ultimately, there is no desires. A different kind of approach. So Venerable Sariputta say, so this Vupa Samasukha, where all the feelings are very much like subsided, you are not attached to any of them, is the kind of satisfaction, happiness available in the Nibbana. Okay, with that note, I'd like to conclude today's Sutta teaching session. Now, if you have any question, now please feel free to ask that. Okay, one moment. There's a question from our side. Venerable Dhamma Vijita is going to ask that question. Please go ahead.
Yes, Bhante. Thank you, Bhante, for your teaching. Seems as though this teaching is about letting go of our clinging to feelings and just experiencing them as phenomena that are that I don't own these phenomena. They're just, you know. So is this right? Would you say there's a sort of no self, because we're not saying this is my feeling. We're just examining it as a natural phenomena that is available to all human beings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so, because you understand here this body also going through these kind of feelings, someone else's body is also going through such kind of feelings. So it's a kind of a common fact we all share. So then there is no any kind of a speciality when you are going through it, because these are internal feelings. But when you are going through that feeling, it becomes an external feeling to me. So, but still, this understanding is kind of common to all. Now, one may practice with respect to one's own feelings, say bodily feelings, and recognize their true nature. And when he see that someone else also is going through such kind of a situation, so he can inferentially understand, okay, this is the nature of the feelings. So his mind is not disturbed about it or attached towards it. So he may, because he has seen the true nature by referring to himself. So that is one aspect. On the other hand, so understanding feelings, seeing them with their proper perspective. So typically it's a bit difficult, because feelings are very, you know, connected to us. So there's a fair tendency, once we go through certain feelings, we start recognizing them, we start thinking about them, and ultimately we start proliferating about them. Overthinking can happen. Like, say, for example, in explaining the Madhupindika Sutta, So when feelings happen, then yang vedithi tan sanjanati, we start recognizing it. Yang sanjanati tan vitakketi, we tend to think about it. Yang vitakketi tan papancheti, and ultimately we tend to overthink about it, proliferate about it. So now your mind is not calm. Your mind is somewhat disturbed. You become restless. You become sort of anxious. So you are fairly disturbed by these feelings. But when the body is going through feelings, when the mind is going through feelings, if there are no thoughts, if there are no thoughts, how can we say that I have a kind of disturbed from that? We can't stop that, the body going through any kind of feelings. Since it's a living body, it may always go through some kind of a feeling. But if mind is not disturbed through that, if mind is not getting involved with that, so mind is not sort of getting mixed up with it, but able to retain its peacefulness, able to retain its say calmness, say peacefulness, so then we can say, yes, body is going through certain painful feelings, maybe pleasant feelings, but mind remains calm. Mind is able to maintain its clarity. So I think in such way we can recognize, and there's a very interesting kind of concluding remark actually Buddha made in the what we call in Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta. So there Buddha says, so when one have such kind of a deeper understanding about the feelings, so he mentioned even the last feeling, you know, that you know this is kind of a terminal feeling that I am experiencing. So this is a kind of a painful feeling, an extremely painful thing, but this is the last one. After that, the body dies. And after that, body dies. And since you are not attached to it, ultimately it also ceases. So jivita pariyattakam vedanam vediyamano jivita pariyattikam vedanam vediyami iti pajanati. Kaya pariyattikam vedanam vediyamano kaya pariyantikam vedanam vediyami iti pajanati. So this is how it is mentioned in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta. So Buddha gave a interesting simile there. Telancha paticca vattincha paticca telappa dipo jhayati. Tasseva telasacha vattiyacha pariyadana anyasacha anupahara anaharo nibbayati. Now say there is a lamp. It needs oil and it needs the wick. So if we see that the oil is now sort of exhausting, now no more oil is there. So since no more oil is available, so ultimately the lamp will die. Lamp will extinguish. We are not adding further oil. Ultimately it will cease. The lamp will simply extinguish. Another phenomena is, oil may be available, but the wick is now getting sort of faded away. And as it is finished, that also completely extinguished the flame. Since we are not putting a new wick, the lamp completely extinguished. Isn't it? So, because the fuel is not given, the necessary two kinds of fuel, the wick and the fuel, the oil. Since these two aharas, these two nutriments are not available, the lamp, the light will simply vanish, simply cease to exist. Similarly, Buddha says, so this body needs what you call the jivita, you know, the kind of life faculty coming from the body. And whatever the ayu that coming maybe from the kamma, it's kind of a continuation. So all that is a kind of a combination is there. Now one can understand, okay, assume that you are utterly sick. You feel that you are going to die now. So the body can't exist further. And what one is experiencing is fairly the last moments. So he has that kind of an understanding and he is not grasping it. That type of Vedana also he is not grasping, because he know, so this is a jivita pariyattikam vedanam vediyamano jivita pariyantikam vedanam vediyami iti pajanati. కాయస్స భేద పరంమరణ ఉద్ధం జీవిత పర్యాదాన ఇదేవ సబ్బ వేదయితాని అనభినందితాని సీతి భవిష్యంతి ఇది పజాన. సో దీస్ ఆర్ వెరీ స్ట్రాంగ్ స్టేట్మెంట్స్ యాక్చువల్లీ. సో బుద్ధ మెన్షన్ ఆఫ్టర్ దిస్ బాడీ డైస్ ద లైఫ్ ఎండ్స్ సబ్బ వేదయితాని అనభినందితాని ఆల్ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ ఫీలింగ్స్ నాట్ బీయింగ్ అటాచ్డ్ టు నాట్ బీయింగ్ గ్రాస్ప్డ్ దే కంప్లీట్లీ కూల్ డౌన్ దే కంప్లీట్లీ కామ్ డౌన్ ద బాడీ డైస్ అండ్ దట్స్ ఇట్. So he attains Nibbana basically after the end. Basically that is the what we can say is the Anupadisesa Parinibbana. Because whatever the feelings attributed towards the body still there, but you are not attached to them. At the last moment you understand, okay, this is a kind of a end feeling that I am going through. Terminal feeling that I am going through since I am not grasping that either. Ultimately as the body dies that also concludes. Mind does not attach to that feeling and everything ceases.
Yes, yes.
Very interesting. I mean, in a way, very profound. And how Buddha mentioned about it in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta in Majjhima Nikaya. And so that is something I like to share also. Very, 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 I mean, one needs a fair amount of practice. We can't say that one is having such kind of a capacity to immediately to have in the deathbed. Rather, one has to have thorough understanding and develop fair amount of non-grasping state of the mind. And even when he is going through that end feeling, so there are, because Bodhi summarizes here, let me read it. I feel a feeling terminating with the body. When he feels a feeling terminating with life, he understands. I feel a feeling terminating with life. And he feels a terminating a feeling with the body. So whatever. And he understands. On the dissolution of the body, with the ending of life, all that is felt, not being delighted in, will become cool right here. Bhikkhu, just as an oil lamp burns in dependence on oil and a wicking, and when the oil and wick are used up, if it does not get any more fuel, it is extinguished from lack of fuel. So too, when he feels a feeling terminating with the body, a feeling terminating with the life, he understands. I feel a feeling terminating with life, he understands. On the dissolution of the body, with the ending of life, all that is felt, not being delighted in, will become cool right here. Yeah. And Buddha adds actually, therefore a bhikkhu possessing this wisdom possesses the supreme foundation of wisdom. So this is not a typical wisdom actually. It's the arahant's wisdom we are talking here, where he is not grasping anything and he is capable of bearing this terminal last feeling also, and he is not grasping that either. He knows, I am not grasping, I am not delighted with anything, any kind of feeling. So at the end of this body, everything ceases, no more existence, no more rebirth.
Yes, thank you for saying.
Yeah.
Could I say that, so these are great analogies to be with our practices, that with death, we're the end of suffering, the end of feelings. But in our practice, where you mentioned if we have a feeling and then there's thinking arising,
exactly.
Which means there's a self, there's a clinging
exactly.
to that
exactly.
feeling. So if we can give up that self, or if we're aware, if we're mindful, then that ignorance doesn't come into
exactly.
play. We can let go of the self and come back to right here I am.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I think that is the area that we can work out, because feelings are unavoidable. We can't stop the feelings part. So till we have the senses, feelings are going to arise. Even the arahant may go through various feelings. But how about not having craving to them? Isn't it?
Yeah.
Now that's why with respect to the Buddha, it is mentioned. So while he partake the meals, So basically, he too experienced pleasant feelings. But there is no lust towards that. There is no greed towards that pleasant feeling. The craving part is not available. Feelings are there. Craving part is not there. And so basically, we can say, so if one can recognize the craving happens and how proliferation happens, how thinking happens, when one go through feelings, so that can be worked out. That can be worked out. Yeah, slowly you abandon that thinking part, overthinking part, proliferating part, and slowly you come to a state where no thoughts, no thinking available in the mind, but now body is going through some pleasant feeling. How about maintaining that absence of thoughts, isn't it? How one can be able to maintain that non-proliferative state of the mind? Then we can say fairly, there are feelings, but there are pleasant feelings, pleasurable feelings, but we can't say there is a huge identification with it. There is a huge desire, craving arisen because of those feelings. Feelings are there, they may come and go, but you are in a unbinding kind of a state, not grasping them, and simply looking at them objectively. Knowingly they are there, but you are not attached to them.
Yeah.
You are not disturbed by them.
Yes. Yeah, thank you, Bhante. And so when we have a thought arise in regard to a feeling, we may just look at the thought and with a curiosity just ask, what what is this? Why, you know, or I don't know if you can have an example, but say, This ice cream is really good. There's not even, it's sort of a chemical reaction that's going on. It's just so good. And we're not even, we're just believing that this is good. Maybe to think it's good is just
It's kind of an attachment.
Delusion.
Delusion. Because you are being excited about it.
Yes.
So that is something that then we lose our, you know, the middle range. The mind has become excited.
We've gone over into...
Overwhelmed.
Yes.
You have jumped to the kind of elated state.
Yes. But if we just wait and be mindful while we're eating it, there may be not that following.
We are not reacting.
Into it.
Exactly. We are not trapped into that experience. Yeah. While the present experience is there, you are still able to go through it without being trapped in it, without being elated by that, isn't it?
Yes.
So, I mean, what you are experiencing is really a beautiful taste. Maybe you are having an ice cream, which is a really delicious one.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't prohibit us to go through the present feelings.
Right.
So if we simply say, okay, you should never eat ice cream. Because it will provide you a lot of pleasant feelings.
Yes.
I'm going to prohibit that. So that is not the way.
Right.
So when we are going through it, is it possible to maintain the peacefulness of the mind without getting disturbed? And time to time, if there is craving arise, that also you need to check. You need to recognize, okay, let that craving slowly abandon. So not being arahants, there may be a possibility time to time craving could arise. You start a little bit happy about it. And that has to be checked and abandoned. So, as much as possible, that uninvolved mind, unattached mind has to be maintained. Very, very interesting. I mean, these things are not, we simply have to discuss and, theoretically understand, as you mentioned. So, in the real life situations, we need to see this, we need to practice. Is it possible for me to go through feelings without attached to them? Without being disturbed by that. Now we can say the opposite also. Now say you are going through some painful experience. Say you have gone through a snake bite. Maybe a painful experience is there on your leg. Are you crying about it? Are you, cursing the pain or cursing the snake or cursing the others, blaming others? Or are you able to somewhat patiently endure it? Isn't it? Because a fair amount of patient endurance is needed when we are going through some unpleasant, painful bodily experiences because you feel it. Mm-hmm. How about keeping the mind unattached? How about keeping the mind undisturbed? So that's why Buddha advised that part in the Salla Sutta, where a typical person, the worldly ignorant person, whenever he go through physical pain, he adds mental pain onto that. So he experiences two kinds of pains, two kinds of suffering. But on the other hand, the noble disciple, when he go through unpleasant, painful feeling, he simply restricts it to the bodily unpleasant, painful feeling. He does not add mental suffering onto that. That is the area that we need to work out, because that's the advice Buddha given even to Nakulapita when he's saying that I am getting sick often now, I am quite old now, so this body is like a, you know, wretched out cart. So it's very much often this body gets sick now. And then Buddha says, yes, householder, so this is so. This body is very much like a worn out cart and it's often gets sick. But how are you going to maintain a peaceful mind even when the body is sick? So that is a challenging area.
Feelings is a very important thing we could use.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, Priyanka, we can get into the Zoom.
Okay, Bhante. Kumuduri, you can unmute and talk.
Thank you, Bhante. I joined the program a little late, inadvertently. So excuse me if I. So anyway, what I wanted to ask you was, Bhante, this is a sutra teaching today about the Vedana Pasana. Now Goenka teaches us, you know, the Vedana Anupasana, right? So in that, when you are doing the way he teaches you, observing the sensations on your body from head to toe and then from top, you just sort of observe it without giving any value judgments to it. And then you come to the, you know, that is how it happens. So in the way you have taught it, you're taking, you know, whatever we observe in our daily living not getting attached to it, right? So anyway, what I'm trying to say is he calls them sensations, bodily sensations.
Right.
So is there a difference? If you get what I'm trying to say, Bhante,
yes.
Bodily sensations, like from the top of your head, he wants you to observe the feelings on the top of your head, then go little by little, bit by bit, all the way down to your head, along your arms and body and all the bodily sensations. And then you come back up, so you go on doing that.
Yeah.
So that's the way he teaches it.
Correct.
So bodily sensations, how do you equate it to the way you are teaching it in this sutta?
I think basically bodily sensations is a kind of an umbrella term where the, you know, in the Kayanupassana, we specifically talk about element characteristics. So we are coming to a very fundamental level where you can recognize hardness, softness, say roughness, smoothness, heaviness, lightness, then various vibrations, heat, cold. Now these are, we typically call them as element characteristics in the Kayanupassana, in the Dhatu Manasikara. And on the other hand, in the Vedanupassana, we look at from a different angle and we call them maybe equanimous feelings, maybe pleasant feelings, maybe unpleasant feelings.
Right.
Now when we are calling all as bodily sensations, so I feel, this is my personal opinion, we may be very much like using the term bodily sensations for commonly to all these categories.
these characteristics.
For both.
But
both.
It is a very, yeah, very effective way of, you know, you get very good results with it, Bhante.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because
so I'm not really sure how to connect the two, but you do get, because, if, you know, after a while when you do this, you are like observing these things happening like an electric current in your body, and it's almost not you, you're just
observing
somewhere else observing this happening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So same thing, the same result has to happen in our practice as well. I mean, there can't be much difference, because the only difference I see in this Mahasi approach and the Goenka approach is that, as you said, in the Goenka approach, one is practicing from top to bottom. Top to bottom in the sense from the head to toe, that you are doing a kind of a continuous body scanning. And that is how you recognize various sensations. On the other hand, in the Mahasi tradition, the approach is that you are jumping from one sensation to the other sensation, or jumping from one element characteristic to the other element characteristics in a as it happens, without
going wherever it happens,
because you have the capacity to quickly jump, quickly focus, quickly concentrate your attention onto any sensation, any phenomena, without much trouble, because you are practicing mostly the, you know, the walking meditation. The walking meditation gives us that capacity, develops us that skill, where wherever you want to navigate, wherever you want to focus your attention, you can quickly focus that. So you don't need to do a kind of a system, a kind of continuous body scanning from top to bottom. Instead, you are always ready. You may be experiencing one sensation and now you are observing that, investigating that in your left arm. Next moment, if there is a sensation available in your right arm, now you can jump to that right arm. You don't need to go through the head to toe. So likewise, so this is the only difference I see, and the absence of the walking meditation. So that is the difference that I see in the Goenka tradition. But all these are anyway coming from Burma. You know that both these techniques are coming from Myanmar. And by the way, I mean, it's giving the same, very much the same results.
Bhante, I want to ask you a question. I am coming to Sri Lanka in February and I want to come and attend one of your retreats there. But I can't do walking meditation because I have a foot problem. So how, is it... Will you admit me, or am I not able to come because of it?
I mean, maybe you can wear socks, or you can walk in-house. That is also available. You don't need to go outside.
So I can wear some shoes and do it?
Can. No, thing is, if you are doing it outside, you can wear shoes. If you are doing it inside, you can wear socks. That's also possible. There are inside... in-house walking paths available.
Bhante, I can't wear walk with just socks, Bhante. I have plantar fasciitis and I have to always wear something.
Should be able to work out.
Okay, thank you very much, Bhante.
Yeah, yeah.
And the schedule for March is not out yet, is it?
March?
Yes.
Yes, already available. Till April.
Already available?
Yes, till April it is uploaded.
Okay, I will check on it. I checked it a couple of weeks ago and it wasn't. Maybe it is now. Thank you very much, Bhante.
Priyanka can update us, because Priyanka is the one prepared this schedule. I think she prepared till April.
Okay, thank you, Bhante.
Am I correct, Priyanka?
Yes, Bhante, is till April we publish in the
week. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. Tervan Saranai.
Tervan Saranai.
Tervan Saranai. Much merit for all these teachings of yours, Bhante.
Yeah.
Yeshan, now you can talk.
Tervan Saranai, thank you so much.
Tervan Saranai.
Seems to be I'm hearing my own echo. Okay, it's disappeared. So I really liked the talk today, and there's some of the questions that Venerable Dhamma Vijaya asked as well, that basically gave some type of a answer that I was looking for a while. When I think about an individual of my family's, but so that was a pretty good answer. I also kind of like what you talked about, eating an ice cream and getting indulged there. And I remember when I came to Sri Lanka very recently, I had a kiripani. So the very first time that when I ate, you know, like I felt that there is that kind of a lust or the craving for it. The second and the third, I felt, why am I even eating it? You know, like there was just, it's another food that I'm sort of consuming.
After a long time, you are going to have it.
There's a
only available in Sri Lanka, you know.
Exactly. I think that is the reason why I wanted to sort of bring this up. Ice cream, of course, you can, any part of the world, you can sort of taste it. But kiripani or the curd and the... So I felt that the second and the third, you know, spoonful that I'm consuming, you know, there is no much of a taste or the thought that I had as a child, it doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, okay, thought I should bring that up as well.
Mm-hmm.
So Bhante, with this talk, there are a couple of questions that arise, and then I thought I should ask that. The very first one during the talk, and relating to some of the previous talks that I have heard from Venerable Dhammajiva as well, and the way that I have understood, this body is your home. So you do your anapanasati and you just try to understand your breathing near the nostrils and try to focus your concentration on the nostrils. And then we were talking about during the talk today, to be available and as an outsider, like a third party, and see all the feelings within the body.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are two type of understanding. One is to see your own feelings from outside, within you, what it's experiencing. And I have experienced that during when you sort of do the walking meditation as well. And I was kind of thinking, why is there two different distinguishing sort of a concepts there that was talked about? One is to bring the mind to your body. The second is to, as a third person, see the body, the changes or the feelings or the experiences that you're experiencing in the body.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it is the same. Basically, while walking, irrespective of whatever the posture you are in, the way of the viewpoint that you have to look at it, it's like an outsider, what we call as parato. That means it doesn't
yes.
belong. It doesn't belong to you. It is not you, but it is the mere body. It is the mere body going through a feeling. Say it's the mere body going through kind of a painful feeling. Now you become kind of detached, disassociated, not identified. It is mere body is going through kind of a feeling. Now feeling is a mere feeling. So this disassociation is what we call as the parato. It's like someone else's feeling. You may get little closer to the body, more than say walking while in sitting. You may be closely examining it, But with a detachment, with kind of a separation, there's a kind of a distance between this observing nature and the whatever you are observing. There's a feeling and you are observing it. So there's a kind of a separation. You are not identifying with it. You are not entangled with it. You have the perspective, okay, it is a mere feeling. It is simply in an and you are looking at it objectively. So this is what we are emphasizing.
Yes, I understand. Thank you so much, Bhante. And there are times that I sort of, on day to day, you sort of experiencing, but there are times that you miss that as well. You know, while maybe while you're walking, you hit your foot on some object and then you feel that and then you react to it, wow, it is so painful, or some kind of sense comes.
Correct.
Unknowingly, and so that basically sort of says that I am in the body now. You're sort of trying to see that not as a third party or the third, you know, as an outsider, but you're sort of feeling within the body and trying to sort of fight for that thought. That's what I was sort of trying to say. So my second question that I have, which I have been trying to sort of find a good way to comprehend this vichikiccha, and I have been sort of searching for it, what is the best way to understand, because sometimes I feel that I have understood, but then again there are times that I sort of question myself, because it is have I understood totally in that context? Is there a good teaching that I can refer to, Bhante?
About what? What do you need to know?
The on that subject of vichikiccha, or the, you know.
Right. What's that? Hindrance, doubt.
Yes.
Actually, I have delivered a sermon on Kaya Sutta, which is based on the Kaya Sutta. There, Buddha talks about five hindrances and seven enlightenment factors. By the way, it is in Sinhala, and I can share it with you. Actually, we are still continuing that series in the 1 day retreat in Nisarnavane. Kaya Sutta. So there may be the fifth sermon could be on the vichikiccha, because one after the other we are going through each and every hindrance, and now actually we are going through the enlightenment factors. Certain amount of information should be there in the vichikiccha side, in the doubt side, in that sermon. Probably I can try to find it, find the link.
I do appreciate, and talking about finding old sermons or the past sermons that I have missed, which I couldn't sort of participate, and when I go to the website, and I sometimes look for most current type of talks, it doesn't display those items. Is there a reason? Maybe something that I have to talk to the administrator, I guess?
Don't know, because everything should be there. Because usually we add almost everything as quickly as possible. Unless there could be a delay. Now, say for example, last Tuesday discussion, yesterday discussion Tuesday discussion might not be added yet. But typically, everything else should be there.
So I'm talking about the Australian.
It is
that I don't see all those.
Those are in the overseas retreat section.
I have gone through the, you know, like you have a calendar in the website to go for past recordings.
Uh-huh.
When I go through that hyperlink, and I only can see, I set it to 100 recordings. So when I only can see two pages, which is less than 200 talks, 200 sermons, I know that, and then it basically ends up in 2022. So now it's almost December 2020.
Can you please send me an email so that I can send it to the administrators? Then it would be easy.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'll send you with screenshots as
well.
That would be helpful.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
That's all what I have.
Okay.
Thurman Sarnai.
I am sharing that link with you about the sutta, the Kaya Sutta. I have sent to you a chat.
Radhika, you can talk now.
Thank you. Bhante, can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm having some difficulty between adukkama sukha and upeksha.
The same. It is the same.
I'm seeing it as two different things. And I'm seeing adukkama sukha in my meditation. When you said, like, sometimes I'm bored because I'm, especially if I'm doing the sitting meditation and it has got a little bit subtle, I'm not really seeing a sukha vedana or a dukkha vedana. I'm not feeling intense pain in my legs or anything like that. So I'm identifying that feeling as boring, or in other words, adukkama sukha, or neutral. Actually, neutral is a better word to use. But I'm identifying equanimous or upeksha as when I am having, like how the lady was saying, a lot of vibrations, a lot of present sensations running down my body from the shoulders to the feet, and it's a pleasant sensation. It is a pleasant sensation in the body but also in the mind. But I know that this is not going to be there, that it will change, and so I'm not attaching to it, and it comes and goes. Sometimes it may be there for a long time, sometimes it doesn't come at all, and I'm calling identification of that I know is present, but because I'm not attaching to it, and when it's not there I don't feel sad or anything, I'm calling that equanimous.
Mm-hmm.
Now from today's talk I thought that you were saying that in the end, when it becomes so subtle and your meditation improves, adukkama sukha becomes equanimous, everything becomes equanimous. I didn't understand that, what exactly happens. So right now I'm at the stage when it's two different things.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'm not in the daily life, not in the meditation, but daily life, I had an small, you know, like a mishap, and it was very painful.
Mm-hmm.
So now for 2 days I thought, okay, I'm not going to take this seriously, but it got worse and worse. So I had to go to the doctor and I had to take some medication. Now, there I couldn't be equanimous. I tried for 2 days thinking, you know, this is not a serious thing. But when I went to see, it was fairly serious. I had to take some medication. Now, is there a point? I understood that in the end, if I had remained equanimous instead of taking a medication, which I have to take because there was inflammation and all, I had to take it. But that the whole thing becomes one. It's all the feelings become one, right? Is that right? Or did I understand it wrong? Like you said, it fades and then the sukha vedana and the dukkha vedana, all is just vedana.
Mm-hmm. No.
All equanimous.
No. Thing
right
is,
now, it's, no. For me, I was not I tried to be equanimous and kind of, but it was an injury to my love.
Yeah, so basically what we are talking, what we are talking here is actually once you are going through the Vedanupassana, so while that meditative experience, you start feeling that you can't distinctly recognize now painful feelings, pleasurable feelings, equanimous feelings. They are not very intense feelings, but I mean, in general, pleasant feelings were there, painful feelings were there, equanimous feelings were there. As you reach some extent, after you going through a certain amount of Vedanupassana practice, now you can come to a situation where everything appear like a flux. Everything is a mixture of everything. Now you can't distinctly recognize whether it is pleasant or painful or equanimous. What you know is it's a mere feeling. I know it's a mere feeling, but I don't know what it is. Because they are quickly passing away. Quickly passing away. So that is
what... The breath is sometimes like that. The breath is sometimes... That's what I call adukkama sukha, because it's not neither pleasant or unpleasant, and there is nothing in the body. But I thought that equanimous was when there was a pleasant or unpleasant feeling, being able to remain without going into delight for the pleasant feeling and wanting it to be there, or when there's a painful feeling without running and trying to avert it by taking a whole bunch of drugs. That is what I was trying to do, with trying to be equanimous with the pain I had and say it'll go away. I can observe it, it'll go away. It didn't go away. It got worse and worse. So that's why I was thinking, how does this thing... Oh, only in meditation, you're saying, right?
Yeah, in meditation.
Okay, so in meditation, just like what happens to the breath, but I don't sit for long enough for there to be a lot of pain. That may be the reason. These, you're talking about people sitting for like 1.5, 2 hours, right?
No. As you continue vipassana practice, Vedanupassana, so, but you need to practice for long in the sense, so several years maybe, then you can come to a situation, because a fair amount of dispassion also has to arise, and you have clearly seen how things are quickly arising and passing away, and it is very quickly now they are passing away. Now, say for example, previously your perception is very much like there is a painful feeling, it lasts for 5 minutes and then it passes away. There is a pleasant feeling, it stays for 3 minutes, it passes away. Now this is not enough for this to happen. There may be another situation, you are further and further practice. Now you can say, okay, there is a painful feeling, it does not last for 7 minutes, 5 minutes, but it even less than 1 second, it quickly arises and passes away, but it happened as a group. That's a kind of a resultant effect. And that's what we call as painful feeling. But what is actually available is a very subtle, minute painful feelings are there. They don't last for a long time. They are quickly arising and passing away, arising and passing away. They are extremely inconstant. Same is true for pleasant feelings as well. So as you are continuing such kind of a practice, ultimately you can come to a situation where something is there, you can't name it. You can't label it whether it is pleasant or painful or equanimous. What you know is very quickly they are passing away. They have become very much like vibrations. And you don't know whether it is a pleasant or painful or equanimous. Very much like everything has become sort of vibrations. Or maybe like fluctuations. Or maybe flux, like a flux.
I'm getting something like vibrations very often, like running down my body. Sometimes the time when I'm just getting up after sleeping, like I might get up at about 2 when my alarm is set for 4, like earlier, if I don't open my eyes, I can see this whole body vibrating, kind of, it's making my body cold, even though the temperature in the room is constant on the thermostat. I can see that as coming and going, very fast. it runs down from the top to the bottom, and as it comes to the bottom, it comes again from the top to the bottom. Is this the same as what you're saying, vibrations?
I didn't get to your questions. So basically, the vibrations are not that what you are talking here. What we are simply is that there may be certain vibrations available even at the Kayanupassana level. I mean, it can be actually equanimous. But what we are talking here is that there may be present feelings, there may be painful feelings, they are quickly arising and passing away. They are minute present feelings, minute painful feelings. So one may come to a situation after some time, now you can't add a label to that because they are quickly passing away. You continue your practice, later you may understand.
Okay, thank you very much, sir. One saranai.
Yeah. Okay, there is a question at the chat. Is there a way, what's that? Is there a way to connect via Zoom to listen to Dhamma talk happening usually at 4 p.m. at Nisarnavane for international retreats? We privileged to participate via Zoom during last 2-3 years, but now not getting emails about the programs. Appreciate if we can at least listen to Dhamma talk of the retreats via Zoom. So I thought actually typically Zoom is available. I'll check that Mahisha is asking question whether they are able to participate via Zoom to Nisarnavane retreats, whether they can listen to Dhamma sermon at 4 p.m. Yes, typically we give that. I'll check that if they are not providing it right now.
I send the email in my email list. I can't remember.
Check whether the Mahisha Pilis is the one asking the question.
Yeah.
Mahisha, probably you can send your email address to Priyanka, so she will coordinate that. So I think we have spent fairly closer to 2 hours. I think this is the time to end the session. Thanks for your participation. We will share the merits with all the celestial beings and whoever in need of merits. Ittavataca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ittavataca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ittavataca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasatthaja bhummatta devanaga mahiddhika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam. Akasatthaja bhummatta devanaga mahiddhika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasatthaja bhummatta devanaga mahiddhika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparam. Idang vo nyati nang ho tu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang ho tu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang ho tu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kamme na mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo ho tu yava nimbana pattiya. Imina punya kamme na mame bala samagamo.
Satang samagamo.
Yava nibbana pattiya imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya sadu sadu sadu.